Welcome to the Fundamental Health Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Paul Saladino. This podcast is the result of my relentless search to understand and correct the roots of chronic disease and illness. In this podcast, I will share with you everything I have learned about how to live the most healthy and radical life possible. Thanks for joining me on this journey. What is up, listeners of my podcast? I appreciate and love you all. I was recording a video for iTunes. Well, it was for IGTV. And then I put it on YouTube today. I did these controversial thoughts videos occasionally on my social media, and I thought, I'm just going to throw it on my podcast. So here you go, a little mini podcast coming at you. There's a video component on YouTube and on IGTV if you want to see the studies that I'm talking about here. But this carbs and PUFA as the cause of metabolic disease is an important concept that I just wanted to make sure I had at least a mini podcast about. So hope you guys will check this one out. Hope you'll check us out at heartandsoilsupplements.com. I am so stoked to be doing this. You guys all know I want you to get as many organs in your diet as possible. If you can get the fresh ones, that's amazing. But if you can't get the fresh ones, I am really proud to be able to bring you grass-fed, grass-finished, regeneratively raised, desiccated organs, all kinds of good stuff. heartandsoilsupplements.com. You can always shoot me an email, Dr. Paul, Dr. Paul, at heartandsoilsupplements.com. If you have questions, I try to get to them all. I really like talking to you guys there. It's super fun. Check out the website. Check out our bone marrow and liver and beef organ supplements. And hope you enjoy this little mini podcast about PUFA and carbs. I hope it clarifies some things. There will be much more to come. What is up, you guys? It's time for controversial thoughts. Let's do it. There's a lot of controversy going on right now. A lot of controversy. I've been talking about polyunsaturated fats, and I've been talking about the fact that I include honey in my diet a lot of days recently, and it is stirring up the hornet's nest in the carnivore community. So I really wanted to break this down for people so they understand very clearly what I am talking about here. I'm going to go through a bunch of science in this one, so hold on to your butts, and you should watch this, obviously, on a video. Let me give you the broad overview. In the setting of metabolic dysfunction, carbohydrates fan the flames. We become carbohydrate intolerant. This is why we observe limitation of carbohydrates being beneficial for many people who have insulin resistance, which we are visualizing as fasting insulin is elevated, prediabetes, diabetes, etc. Elimination of carbohydrates can improve things in that condition because we are carbohydrate intolerant. This does not mean that carbohydrates caused the metabolic dysfunction. And I would argue very strongly that there are many examples of indigenous cultures, which I will show data for in a moment. Sumo wrestlers, not an indigenous culture, but you get the idea. Tukasinta, Tavaruans, Catavans, who eat lots of carbohydrates in their diet and do not develop insulin resistance or metabolic dysfunction. These are synonyms. So anyone who asserts that carbohydrates cause diabetes is wrong. And I will go to the ends of the earth to show them that, because they're wrong, and that's fear-mongering. I am not saying that humans need lots of carbohydrates in their diet. I am not saying that ketogenic diets are not beneficial. But what I am saying is that carbohydrates do not cause diabetes in metabolically healthy individuals. I've shown that in my data. I've shown that in many other people's data, and I will show you why, okay? So what does cause metabolic dysfunction? What starts the fire? I believe this is linoleic acid. This is not my original idea. I'm building on the work of others. Peter at Hyperlipid has done a great thread called the Protons Thread. I've talked a lot about this, trying to connect the dots and add it to his work. Many others. I've talked to Tommy Wood about this on my podcast. All of my podcasts and stuff are available at heartandsoilsupplements.com. You guys all know I'm doing this awesome desiccated organ supplement company. If you need some nose-to-tail nutrition in your life, okay, go over there, check out my podcast, look at my videos. The last one with Tommy Wood, we go into all this in great detail. Let's start with all those pieces. Let's start with evidence that carbohydrate consumption in otherwise metabolically healthy people does not cause insulin resistance and or metabolic dysfunction. All right, I'm going to do this share screen. You guys ready for a bunch of studies? Here we go. Tukasinta population, Papua New Guinea. You guys can see the reference here. You can read it yourself. Very low evidence of cardiomyopathy, hypertension, coronary heart disease, rarely seen among the indigenous population. These people eat a heck of a lot of carbohydrates. Am I advocating for a heck of a lot of carbohydrates? No. Why would I do that? If you eat that many carbohydrates, you're going to be limiting the amount of nutrients you can get from meat and organs. I'm just showing you that carbohydrates do not cause diabetes or insulin resistance in healthy individuals. Catawba study, okay? The Catawba study, cardiovascular risk factors in a Melanesian population apparently free from stroke and ischemic heart disease. The Catawba study. You can look at the study again, and you can look at the later in the study when they talk about what they eat. They eat a large amount of carbohydrates. Carbohydrate intake is high. Total fat intake is low. I don't think fat causes problems, but I want to show you those two populations, no diabetes, and they eat a lot of carbohydrates. To suggest that carbohydrates cause metabolic dysfunction in and of themselves is false. It's false. All right, I want to show you one more here. Even in sumo wrestlers, check this one out. Classification of obesity with respect to morbidity. You guys are going to have to go and look these papers up and read them. You can see down here later in the paper, they talk about the visceral adipose distribution and the visceral fat accumulation in sumo wrestlers. And what you find, if you look at the insulin area, the cholesterol, the triglyceride, the blood sugar area, the BMI, even though sumo wrestlers are super fat because they eat massive amounts of calories, they eat 5,000 to 7,000 calories a day to gain weight, they are not insulin resistant. They're not, because they have very low levels of visceral fat, as you can see here. You will get lots of subcutaneous fat if you overeat 5,000 calories a day in rice. You can generate a lot of subcutaneous fat, but you will not become metabolically unhealthy. You will not get diabetes. Imagine that, right? Okay, I've done my own experiment here. You guys have all seen this. You've seen my data from the CGM. If you haven't seen this, that podcast is also available at the Heart and Soil website. But I want to show you what my blood sugar looks like when I'm eating honey and prove to you that after 4 to 5 months of doing this, basically most days in moderate amounts, 100 to 120 grams of carbohydrates per day in honey, I am not insulin resistant. So again, this graphic is from the CGM podcast I did. This is my continuous glucose monitor that I wore from NutriSense. This is my blood sugar. Look at the baseline. Starts around here, around 70. 80 is about the baseline. I eat some honey here. It goes up to 132. Then it comes right back down within an hour. It stays right there. Then it gets up a little later in the afternoon at dinner. And then it comes back down. You can see furthermore that if you look at the analytics from the continuous glucose monitor, the standard deviation and all of these other metrics are very good. I have a very low standard deviation, a very low max, 100% in range. My average is 73. The median is 71. The minimum is 53 with zero spikes per day above the reference range that is set. My hemoglobin A1C has been checked at 4.8. I have a hemoglobin A1C of 4.8, which means my average blood sugar is around, let's just say, 90. You can see that there are some excursions. It goes a little higher when you exercise. My fasting blood sugar is about 74. Let's ask a question here. What would an average blood sugar be if, say, someone had a hemoglobin A1C of 6.3? No one in particular, just somebody with a hemoglobin A1C of 6.3. What would an average blood sugar throughout the day look like with a hemoglobin A1C of 6.3? That would be an average blood sugar of 134 milligrams per deciliter. All right. Yeah, okay. Let's just put that out there. We'll just note that. Now, I've also done labs on myself, which I will share in a future lab podcast. And like you all to know that my fasting insulin is less than 3 micro IU per ml. My C-peptide is 0.43. Again, my fasting glucose is usually between 70 and 80. I've worn a CGM. I just showed you what my blood sugar response is. I don't know why Dom DiAgostino had such a huge response to sugar on his recent post, but that to me suggests that he's not very metabolically healthy. I would be curious what his linoleic acid is in his diet, because if I eat 25 milligrams of honey, my blood sugar isn't going anywhere. So I'd love to have Dom on the podcast to talk about this. He says he compared it to Coke, although I've never seen anyone repost his data with Coke. But 25 grams of honey causes your blood sugar to go to 174. You're either physiologically insulin resistant because you haven't been eating a whole lot of carbs before that, which is possible with Dom, or you might have some broken metabolism, because that's wrong, Dom, I'm sorry. Come on my podcast anytime. We'll talk about it in detail. I also want to show you guys my linoleic acid. So what do I believe causes underlying insulin resistance? What do I believe breaks our metabolism? Excess linoleic acid. This is an 18-carbon omega-6 fatty acid found in mostly plants. Corn, canola, soybean, safflower, these kind of oils. It's also found in nuts and seeds. And as you know, I've been talking about this recently. Animals eating a lot of corn and soy are going to have fat that's enriched in this. Do I think that lean chicken and pork is a problem? No, there's not a lot of fat in those. Do I think that fatty bacon, fed corn and soy could give us excess linoleic acid? I do. Do I think it's something we can ignore? Well, some people, if they're metabolically healthy, but I don't think it's something we should ignore. Am I saying you should never eat bacon again? No, I'm just giving you a tool. I'm giving you a tool to help you leverage in your own life. Grass-fed beef, linoleic acid is about 1.8%. Pork is about 14 to 16% in the fat. That's a lot more than it should be. Indigenous hunter-gatherers, across the board, Tukasinta, Tava Ruins, Katavans, Ikung, Maasai, Hadza, linoleic acid is 2 to 3% of their calories per day. How many is it today for us? We know that in the last 70 years, linoleic acid has increased 135% in our diet. It's a massive amount right now. I talked about this on the last podcast with Tommy Wood. I talked about it on the podcast with Nina Teicholz. And we see that if we look at fat biopsies, linoleic acid is increasing in free-living humans in 2020 in a big way. Maybe in 2015, which is when this study, which I'll show you, was actually done. So let's look at this one. Increase in adipose tissue linoleic acid of U.S. adults in the last century. It just says what I said. Linoleic acid has increased 136% over the last half century. This increase is highly correlated with an increase in dietary linoleic acid intake over the same period of time. We are eating way more linoleic acid than we have in the past. Most of this, vegetable oils, some of it from nuts and seeds, things like walnuts, sunflower seeds, and some of it from pork, fed corn, and soy. How much is that contributing? You'd have to know how much fat you're getting from pork and how much linoleic acid is in that. Why does this matter? Because we can check the amount of linoleic acid in our body. So this is the kind of stuff that I've done in the past. I've shown my blood work. This is my blood work from about a year ago. And these are in my red blood cells. You can see my linoleic acid percentage was 5.4. I suspect it's even lower now. And you can also see that this can be done in the blood. I'm going to show you guys what the linoleic acid percentage looked like in one of my clients who was eating a lot of pork. So this is in the blood. So the reference range is different for linoleic acid, but he has a linoleic acid of 30% in his blood. Okay, this is from a guy that eats a lot of pork. This is my concern about corn and soy-fed pork. Do we want a linoleic acid that is this high exclusively from meat? This is a client of mine who is eating an essentially carnivore diet that was very rich in pork. He may have polymorphisms that cause him to accumulate more linoleic acid, but that is a striking finding. Do I think pork is the main source of linoleic acid in Americans' diets? No, it's vegetable oils. Is pork a potential contributor? It's possible. I don't think we should ignore it. Am I saying you should never eat bacon again? No, you can eat your bacon. Just know how much linoleic acid is in it. And why would you want the excess linoleic acid? It's causing problems for us. I'm going to show you all the problems that linoleic acid causes. Now, I'm going to show you guys a few more things. I want to show you a CGM from someone that has a broken metabolism. You can contrast this with the way my CGM looked. This is somebody eating beer, battered fish, and coleslaw at 8:25. You can see their blood sugar response is huge. It takes hours. The blood sugar stays elevated for hours postprandially. This is metabolic dysfunction, and this is why it is so important to wear a continuous glucose monitor. Do you think there's any linoleic acid in the coleslaw? Do you think there's any linoleic acid in these baked beer battered fish? Yeah, there probably are. And again, is one meal going to cause a massive problem? Maybe not. But if this person is eating this now, what are they eating much other times in their life? Okay. What are they eating at other times in their life and how much linoleic acid is in their body in general? Why do I think linoleic acid is so bad? Listen to the podcast with Tommy Wood for the whole thing. In basic high-level terms, it appears that linoleic acid allows our fat cells to respond. I think it is an environmental evolutionary signal that winter is coming, that you can get fat, that you can get fat, and especially you can get fat at the visceral adipose tissue level. And that's going to protect you from winter when you're scarce. What's the opposite? Stearic acid. I've talked a lot about this in previous videos and in my podcast. Stearic acid is an 18-carbon saturated fatty acid that appears to make us lean. There are studies done in humans that show that supplementation with stearic acid turns mitochondria on and turns them to a fat-burning mode. There's some really interesting studies, admittedly in rodents, for what it's worth, that show that if you give rodents stearic acid, their visceral adipose tissue goes way down. I've talked about these in previous videos. I can show them in this video in the future if you guys would like. Send me a DM. And when you give a fat stearic acid, the visceral adipose tissue goes down. When you give it linoleic acid, they get really fat in the viscera. Imagine that. Linoleic acid appears to be an evolutionary signal to humans that winter is coming, that we can get fat. eventually, as we keep getting fat, we gain visceral adipose tissue and we can lose insulin sensitivity. Am I saying that any linoleic acid is going to do that? No. Evolutionarily inconsistent levels of linoleic acid. I'll repeat, do I think bacon is the massive factor here? No. Should we ignore it? I don't think so. I want to be optimally healthy. What about you? Do you want excess linoleic acid? Why not be as lean and as metabolically fit as you can be? Why not just get bacon from a cow that, or from a pig, that doesn't eat tons of corn and soy? If you can't find it, why not just eat red meat? It's delicious. So much less linoleic acid, especially if it's grass-fed. Or get some good organs, like liver and stuff like that. That's the way to do it, okay? Let me show you guys why I think linoleic acid is so, so bad. A lot of studies like this that show that linoleic acid also does what is called the formation of oxidized linoleic acid metabolites, 9 and 13 HODE and 4HNE. This study shows that in people with atherosclerosis, there is between a 30 and 100-fold increase in oxidative linoleic acid metabolites in those with atherosclerosis relative to healthy controls, meaning that LDL is enriched in oxidative products of linoleic acid in those with atherosclerosis. Does that sound like something you want enriched in your LDL? Do you want your LDL to be more susceptible to oxidation? That doesn't sound like a good deal to me. Why would we want to get evolutionarily inconsistent levels of this fatty acid in our diet? One more, guys. The hits keep coming. I told you I was going to throw a lot of science at you. Lowering dietary linoleic acid reduces bioactive oxidized linoleic acid metabolites. If you lower the amount of linoleic acid in your diet by predominantly avoiding nuts and seeds, corn and soy, vegetable oils, and maybe avoiding pork that's fed a bunch of corn and soy if it's super fatty, you can lower the levels of 9 and 13 hydroxyoctadecanoadienoic acid, 9 and 13 HODE, or 4-HNE, 4-hydroxynonenal. These four oxalates have been mechanistically linked to pathological conditions ranging from cardiovascular disease to chronic pain. Plasma oxalates, which are elevated in Alzheimer's dementia, and NASH, non-alcoholic steatohepatitis, which is fatty liver, have been proposed biomarkers useful for the presence and severity of both conditions. These results show lowering dietary linoleic acid can reduce synthesis and or accumulation of oxidized LA derivatives that have been implicated in a variety of pathological conditions. All right, pretty clear. Don't want those in your diet. Just in case you weren't convinced, let's talk about dementia. This is one of the HODEs, right? An oxidatively modified peroxyreduxins in the blood of Alzheimer's disease patients and their potential as biomarkers. What they found, the levels of these 9 and 13 HODE, these oxalates in Alzheimer's disease patients were significantly higher than in healthy controls. The total HODE levels increased with increasing clinical dementia ratings. Tell me again why you want to eat excess linoleic acid in your diet? Tell me again. Oh yeah, you don't want to. Especially something from an animal that's not fed a species-appropriate diet. Why are we ignoring this? I don't think it's the main problem, but I think it's something we shouldn't ignore, and we shouldn't just minimize it. And this is not privileged talk. I eat the cheapest meat I can get from Belcampo. It's $8 to $9 a pound, you guys. I don't eat fancy meat. I eat grass-fed, grass-finished, but you can all afford to eat meat that is not fed corn and soy. Believe me, you can. I got somebody commenting on Instagram saying, oh, it's such white privilege. Give me a break. This isn't white privilege. I'm eating meat that's sourced well because I feel like it's valuable. That's an excuse. One more. This one is really cool. Lowering the omega-6 to omega-3 ratio treats fatty liver disease in obese youth. 12 weeks of a diet low in linoleic acid improved fatty liver and the oxalam levels in kids with metabolic dysfunction. Does this sound like something we should be thinking about? I do. I think it sounds like something we should be thinking about. I think that we should not be ignoring PUFAs. You should know how much is coming from certain parts of your diet, and you should just calculate it. Know how much is coming from sunflower seeds or walnuts or corn oil or canola oil. Or if you're eating a ton of bacon, why are you getting all that extra linoleic acid? I'm not saying it's the only thing. I'm just saying it's a contributing factor and it's a problem. Now let's reiterate. Do I think that carbohydrates cause diabetes? Absolutely not. Do they fan the flames? Yes. When you get excess amounts of linoleic acid, when your fat cells, especially the visceral fat, become overly distended and metabolic dysfunction starts, you become carbohydrate intolerant. People are going to say, yes, Paul, but you've told us that 88% of people are metabolically broken. That's right. I think low carb is great for a lot of the population, but you don't need to do it forever. And I am certainly not giving myself diabetes, nor are you if you are metabolically healthy, if you choose to include carbs in your diet. And guess what? You don't have to if you don't want to. I'm just giving you guys tools. You guys know I'm getting paid off by the Honey Lobby, right? You saw my Instagram post yesterday, right? You saw that awesome car that I got with my honey money, right? Oh, if you didn't, I'll show you. Here you go. Some people will say this is Photoshop. Haters are going to say this is Photoshop, but this is real, guys. This is my honey money car. I'm getting paid off by Big Honey. This is a joke, clearly. I get no money from any association with any honey board or anything like that. I'm not promoting honey. You don't have to eat honey. It's something that I included in my diet. I found it valuable. It clearly didn't cause insulin resistance, and it resulted in a much lower fasting blood sugar for me and an average blood glucose, which is 45 to 50 plus. Somebody with a hemoglobin A1C of 6.3. I don't know. My CGM looks really good. So you don't have to do that, but you could if you wanted to, or if you're not thriving on a low carb diet. I'm giving you guys tools, and that's hopefully going to help you. So anyway, that's another option for you if you want to include it in your diet. Do I still eat nose-to-tail carnivore? Absolutely. Are people dogmatically attacking me for not being carnivore anymore? Absolutely. And I think it's hilarious for so many reasons. I want to show you guys one or two other things which really drive this point home. What are my concerns about long-term ketosis? These are my concerns about long-term ketosis. This is a continuous glucose monitor from someone who's been on a zero-carb diet for 5 years. You might say, oh, it looks great. It's all flat. Look at how high their blood sugar is, you guys. Look at how high their blood sugar is. Their fasting blood sugar when they woke up was probably 123 or 124, and they stay at 120 all day long. My baseline is down here. This person never goes here. If you're looking at area under the curve and talking about glycation or advanced glycation end products, I think someone that has a hemoglobin A1C of 6.3, which is a direct measure of glycation, or a hemoglobin A1C that's higher than mine, is going to have to be much more concerned about that than me. And a continuous glucose monitor like that that shows that is also going to be a real indication that there's a possibility for much more advanced glycation end products. I can also show you guys data in another controversial thoughts video showing that linoleic acid has been associated with increased carboxymethylysine, which is an endogenous product of advanced glycation. So what I'm saying here is that in metabolically healthy individuals, there is zero evidence that carbohydrates cause metabolic dysfunction. I am not giving myself any problems by including honey, an ancestrally consistent food that might even be considered a carnivore carbohydrate, in my diet. Nor should you worry about that. If you want to eat some fruit from time to time, I would think of that as carnivore-ish. I'm not trying to be dogmatic. If you read my book, The Carnivore Code, you know there's different tiers in that book. We're talking about helping as many people as we can, not being dogmatic about which foods are carnivore and not. I'm interested in how people understand that red meat is not harmful for us, that organs are critical for human health, and that plants exist on a toxicity spectrum. And furthermore, I really believe strongly that excess linoleic acid at levels that are evolutionarily inconsistent is the single driving factor of metabolic dysfunction. How many people do you know on ketogenic diets who can't lose weight because they're still getting too much linoleic acid, is my hypothesis. How much nut butter, how many nuts, how many high linoleic acid foods that might be signaling to their fat that winter is coming and they should store fat are still in their diet? Nuance matters. It's important that we understand and communicate what the actual cause of metabolic dysfunction is. And it's not carbohydrates. I'm sorry. I've got a lot of friends in the ketogenic community who I'm going to disagree with respectfully here. It's not carbohydrates. Removing carbohydrates in the setting of metabolic dysfunction can be helpful, but they didn't cause the fire. So if you're metabolically well, you can have them in your diet if you want or not. If you are on a ketogenic diet and you are getting cramps or palpitations, you have an electrolyte problem and you need carbohydrates back in your diet. How do you get them back in? You better eliminate this linoleic acid, because when you need to reincorporate carbs, as many humans do, if you don't eliminate linoleic acid or cut it down greatly, you are going to run into all sorts of problems. You end up between a rock and a hard place. And that is my concern, that people on low-carb diets are not going to resolve the underlying fire of metabolic dysfunction without lowering linoleic acid in their diet, and they won't be able to reincorporate carbs without having carb intolerance. You got to fix the underlying metabolic dysfunction first. How do you do that? I think you do that by reducing linoleic acid. Can carbohydrate restriction during that time be helpful? Absolutely. Did it cause it? No, it didn't. Do I think that low-carb diets are valuable for humans? Absolutely. Do I eat 55% of my calories from carbs? No. Maybe 15? I'm still on a low-carb diet, even with honey. So it's really important that we're clear about what we're saying here. Are we saying that carbs cause diabetes? I don't know. Some people in the community seem to be accusing me of that, or saying that it will cause a problem for me, or that fructose is going to cause excess glycation when there's no evidence of glycation on my hemoglobin A1C. That's interesting. And we're actually not talking about the thing that I think is mostly driving insulin resistance. So that, I think, is how we help people heal in the best ways, help them understand the root cause. The root cause. Let's go back to what I said earlier in this little mini podcast shenanigans. A lot of the population is metabolically unhealthy. Eliminating carbohydrates can be helpful for a lot of people. It didn't cause the problem. You can do that, but if you don't correct the thing that's causing the problem, the fire's still going to burn. Do I think low-carb diets are going to help a lot of people? Absolutely. Do that and think about linoleic acid, and we will really get people healthy. That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying, you guys. And I'm saying that, like I am demonstrating, like the Tukasinta, the sumo wrestlers, the Katavans, and the Tavaroons demonstrate in metabolically healthy populations, carbohydrates are not going to cause problems. So we'll see. Thanks for watching this, guys. Check us out, heartandsoilsupplements.com. Check out my book, The Carnivore Code. Hopefully, we'll be doing a podcast soon to talk about this in more detail. But until then, stay radical, you guys. Leave me some stuff in the comments. Let me know what you think of this. And I hope this is helpful. If you guys comment on things that you would like me to talk about, anything that's not clear, you can send me an email, drpaul@heartandsoilsupplements.com, or you can leave it in the comments. Love you all. Hope you're having a good day. Like I said, my goal is just to help you guys attain health, to give you tools to do that without a dogmatic focus behind it. There's no agenda here. I ain't getting paid by nobody, you guys. Like, yeah, you make money from a supplement company, but it's a supplement company that I believe is getting people the most nutrient-rich foods on the planet. So that's a very valuable mission that I feel very passionately about. But I'm getting no money from honey. I've never been paid to do that. There's no interest there. That's absurd. And I'm just going to say that I feel like anyone who accuses me of that is being a little bit childish. And I'm bummed about that. I'm bummed about the division in the community. I feel like there's a lot of dogma, and I'm doing my best to really fuse it by getting us onto a podcast together. And I'm hoping it happens in a civil way. It hasn't been easy to do so far, but we're trying. So that's what I'm trying to do for you guys. I hope you're doing good. Stay radical. Love you all.